WJFF in Jeffersonville, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, redistricting redo. This week, New York's highest court rejected new congressional and state Senate maps that had widely been seen as favoring Democrats. Yesterday, a judge delayed some of New York's primaries after the court tossed out those maps. What's going on? We'll speak with SUNY Sullivan's Jay Quaintance to try to make sense of it all. Erin Shearer is eating upstate. Today, she's at the Brushland Eating House in Bovina, New York. And from Radio City to the Chi Hive, Jesse Spisato speaks to Amanda McCormick, a former Rockette and now embodied movement specialist, about how she dove into her own healing, love, acceptance, and growth. And remembering Mark Switko, a preview of tomorrow's Sunday Stage, honoring this musician and sound healer. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. President Biden tells reporters he is saddened by the first reported death of an American fighting in Ukraine. NPR's Amy Held reports at the same time the White House is warning other Americans not to take up arms against the Russians there.
Willie Joseph Cancel was a 22-year-old Marine veteran, husband, and father to a 7-month-old son, according to his family. They tell media outlets he was killed earlier this week in Ukraine while working with a private military contracting company. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki expressed her condolences, noting that while there is still no official confirmation of Cancel's death, she knows Americans want to help.
But we do encourage Americans to find other ways to do so rather than traveling to Ukraine to fight there.
Ukraine has formed an international legion, recruiting thousands of foreign fighters to bolster its defense against Russia. Amy Held, NPR News.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is linking peace talks with a lifting of Western sanctions and remarks to the Chinese Xinhua State News Agency. Lavrov said the sanctions and arms shipments to Ukraine are impeding the talks. Ukraine says the sanctions need to be strengthened. President Biden is weighing into another Democratic congressional primary, this time for a tensely contested seat in Ohio. Here's NPR's Juana Summers.
Biden is backing Representative Chantel Brown, who won her seat in a special election in 2021. Brown is facing a rematch against former state Senator Nina Turner. Turner has had the support of many far-left Democrats, as well as Senator Bernie Sanders. She was a co-chair of Sanders' 2020 campaign. Like the 2021 face-off between Brown and Turner, this race is a reminder of tension between the Democratic Party's more moderate core and its left flank. But this year, the Congressional Progressive Caucus's PAC is backing Chantel Brown. The primary is on Tuesday. Juana Summers, NPR News.
North Korea warning it could take preemptive action against nuclear threats from enemy forces. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reporting that as North Korea moves quickly to upgrade its nuclear weapons, it has expanded its list of scenarios in which it might use them.
The official Korean Central News Agency quoted leader Kim Jong-un Saturday as telling military commanders to build up strength in order to preemptively contain threats, including nuclear ones. Kim met the commanders to congratulate them on a military parade on Monday, at which the North displayed its newest intercontinental and submarine launched ballistic missiles. Kim said after the parade that while deterring war is the main purpose of Pyongyang's nuclear arsenal, it's not the only one. His remarks suggest that it could also be used to offset the U.S. and South Korea's advantage in conventional arms, or simply to blackmail concessions out of them. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Seoul.
This is NPR News. Stocks ended a volatile week, trading down significantly. NPR's David Gura reports lackluster tech earnings pushed the Nasdaq deeper into bear market territory.
The Nasdaq is now down almost 24% from its recent high. Big tech companies, including Apple and Amazon, say they expect inflation and supply chain issues will continue to affect their profitability. Apple pointed to China's crackdown on an uptick in coronavirus cases as one cause for concern. Apple is among a handful of companies that also say they've been affected by Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which has led to higher commodities prices. There's likely to be more volatility as earnings season continues on Wall Street, and the Federal Reserve has signaled it's likely to raise interest rates more aggressively to fight inflation when it meets next week. David Gura, NPR News, New York.
An arena in Omaha is expected to be packed today. Warren Buffett is to speak and take questions at Berkshire Hathaway's annual shareholders meeting. It's the company's first in-person meeting since before the pandemic. New York Mets catcher James McCann says getting the victory last night over the Philadelphia Phillies was the most important thing. But he says being involved in Major League Baseball's first no-hitter of the season was special.
Obviously, the win is most important, but you start paying attention about sixth, seventh inning. You start hearing the crowd getting into it, realizing that there's a chance for something special.
Five Mets pitchers combined to complete the no-hitter against the Phillies. Together, they threw 159 pitches in the 3-0 victory. It was only the second no-hitter in Mets history. I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Carnegie Corporation of New York, supporting innovations in education, democratic engagement, and the advancement of international peace and security. More information is available online at carnegie.org.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. New York's redistricting saga took another dramatic turn yesterday. A New York judge ordered that the state's congressional and state Senate primaries be delayed until August 23rd to provide enough time to replace district maps that were ruled unconstitutional earlier this week. State Judge Patrick McAllister moved the primaries back from their original date of June 28th. He said the independent expert he tasked with helping him craft new map districts will be ready by May 20th. New York is set to separately hold gubernatorial and state assembly primaries in June unless lawmakers or Governor Kathy Hochul decide to delay. Now, New York once held congressional and state office primaries on separate dates, but lawmakers in 2019 consolidated them to save money, increase voter turnout, and to make the process less confusing for the public. I'm not sure that that's working out so well. Here to help us sort it out is SUNY Sullivan President Jay Quaintance, who is no stranger to New York politics. Prior to joining SUNY Sullivan, he served as Assistant Secretary for Education in the Cuomo administration. Jay, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So just when you thought it was safe to go back to the polls, things got a little more confusing. Yesterday afternoon, this ruling came down, but let's rewind all the way back to Wednesday and talk about how this got started. New York's highest court Wednesday rejected those congressional maps that had widely been seen as favoring Democrats. Why did that happen?
Well, I think in order to understand really what happened, we have to wind all the way back to 2014. When New York voters determined that districting or redistricting, because it happens on a cyclical basis, should be carried out by an independent commission. So there was the creation of this independent redistricting commission. And they were tasked with, and it was a 50-50 split between Republicans and Democrats. They were tasked with moving forward anytime that redistricting happens. And it does happen cyclically, and it's very much tied to census data and as any kind of state evolves, people move around and the districts no longer are relevant to the constituencies that they're supposed to represent. So 2014, the Constitution was amended to create this independent commission, very bipartisan. Fast forward to 2020, and what really happened was the commission couldn't come up with a set of maps for districts that the assembly would approve. So the assembly, the only thing I can really say is that I think they got a little bit over the tips of their skis, if you'll forgive the metaphor, and thought, well, we'll just take this on ourselves because we can't understand what their maps are. We don't agree with them. And so they created a set of maps and moved forward. The maps require assembly approval, and that's where we landed. Obviously, because the assembly is controlled by the Democrats, the Republicans in the state kind of thought, well, that doesn't seem exactly correct. So they created this challenge. And on Wednesday, the courts determined that, in fact, the maps weren't redrawn in a constitutional way. So here we are. The idea that somehow voting should be, or the access to voting or access to information should be more transparent, less confusing, more financially feasible for the state, all of that now has gone really by the wayside.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're in a situation where people are more confused, and it's going to cost more money, and we're not quite sure where it's going to land.
Well,
honestly.
Yeah, and when Democrats were redrawing these maps, it was not unknown that they might face a challenge, but they went ahead anyway, and as you said, kind of got over their skis. And did you saw these maps before they were ruled unconstitutional? I mean, from anybody's eye, they did seem to be rather contorted.
Well, I would agree they are rather contorted. But the previous maps, or the what I guess are for the time being the current maps, are rather contorted as well. And we can just use the district that Sullivan County falls in terms of Congress. You know, the 19th district is a very strange map. It goes all the way up into the Capital District. It doesn't have a lot of overlap with our contiguous counties. It's not, you know, I don't think it actually represents for certain people in Sullivan County and what their interests are. We're much more closely tied to the lower Hudson Valley and New York City. And so there is a very valid argument that the districts are not accurate at the current point in terms of representing the values and the needs of certain areas. That said, I don't think that it made sense for the assembly just to go out and say, well, we're just going to redo this, because even, you know, the most nonpartisan observer can say this looks pretty partisan in terms of how they were redrawn.
Well, I mean, it's not unusual, I suppose, for the party in power to draw to their favor. So that's not so out of the ordinary. But I guess this bet that the Democratic leaders decided to make really did blow up. You know, they hope that the legal challenge would withstand scrutiny, and it didn't. You know, in the way these were redrawn in the 19th district specifically, which includes most of our listening area, we were going to get a new representative in Congress. It was going to go from Antonio Delgado to Mondaire Jones, and they've already started campaigns with this new ruling yesterday, moving these primaries back into August. What does that mean for these campaigns, and who's going to be my representative?
Well, you know, in terms of who's going to be your representative right now, as things stand, we should be looking at Delgado as the incumbent and whoever is going to end up challenging Delgado. But the reality of it is a huge reset for these campaigns, and they're all scrambling a little bit. You know, since the maps had been redrawn and that was where people thought they were moving forward, the campaign's really shifted. And honestly, we haven't seen a lot of Delgado since that announcement that we were now part of the 17th rather than the 19th. Fully understandably, I mean, you know, as any politician would, they campaign in the district at which they believe they're running. And so, you know, Mondaire Jones has been very prominent in Sullivan County in the last couple of months and taking meetings and really trying to understand what the needs of this county are, and his new as a new part of his district in the 17th. And you know, I can appreciate the scramble that they're all going through right now. It is certainly challenging to know exactly who your constituency is and what do you need to do to best serve them at the national level.
We should note that Brandon Bacola and Marcus Molinaro are running in the Republican primary for the U.S. House in New York's District 19, and the winner of that would go on to face either Antonio Delgado or Mondaire Jones, depending on how things go. Now, depending on how things go is up to a specially appointed map drawer. The court's going to oversee this, and then as yesterday we noted that they should have those done by May 20th. So do you think it's going to be any clearer in the next 3-4 weeks?
Well, you know, with the hard deadline of the new maps, so the gentleman that's been appointed to do this, Jonathan Service, he has a long history in this field, and he's a GIS guy. So, you know, he understands mapping, and he understands constituencies. And in fact, his doctorate really addressed underrepresented populations in these kinds of cases. And so I think he's a perfect person. I do think it's a little bit ironic that we went from the idea in 2014 that the Constitution of New York State was amended to include this bipartisan commission to do this work. And now, fast forward, here we are, and we have one person being appointed by the court to do this same job. I'm not sure what that says about transparency or electoral politics or New York politics generally, but I think we've lost sight of something in that process. And I understand that we have a timeline. It is, as I said earlier, elections are very expensive propositions. And it's important for people to understand that there's a lot of lead time necessary, printing of ballots, making sure that military personnel who might not be local are able to vote in their congressional district or in their assembly or state Senate races. All of that is really, it takes a lot of time and energy and money to make sure all of that is able to happen. And so this is very, very last minute, these kinds of things. So May 20th, while that's great, primaries were going to be in June, and actually Tuesday in my mail, I got a reminder of where my polling place is, that I was now voting in the 17th, and that these, that this is what was going to happen. Wednesday, all of that blew up, and now here we are on Saturday, and we're still talking about changes that are ongoing. So I can understand voters' confusion and, honestly, a little bit of frustration. All I can say is that people need to pay attention, and as this evolves, just be engaged, which I would always say to people. Electoral politics is complicated. The stakes they don't seem necessarily high at times, but they really are, because these are the people that are, elected by constituents to represent them in making decisions that affect broad swaths of the population and how funds are allocated for different purposes within a region or within a congressional district or within a state. So we need to be aware of this, and we need to be paying attention, reading the papers, listening to the radio, figuring out what's going on, and understanding what the values of the various candidates that are running are, to make sure that you're casting a vote that gets you what you need in your area.
And those state Senate primaries and congressional primaries are moved to August 23rd. But for now, the gubernatorial and state assembly primaries are still in June. What do we know about the lieutenant governor situation? Lieutenant Governor Benjamin resigned, and there was a whole discussion about whether he would remain on the ballot or not. Governor Hochul has come out saying she'd like him removed. Do we have any clarity there?
Not yet. state law determines how people are on the ballot and under what conditions they can be removed from the ballot. And at this point, the only real options are that the lieutenant governor would either move out of state, which would disqualify him from being eligible for election, or be nominated to run in another race for a different office. Governor Hochul has petitioned we changed the state law to say that, this person who is now resigned from the post actually should not be able to be on the ballot. It's honestly a big mess. And I don't think we really understand where it's going to land. Obviously, the Republicans are not inclined to allow him to remove himself from the ballot voluntarily or allow Governor Hochul. New York's interesting in that we have a governor and a lieutenant governor, although they run separately.
Right.
It's not a combined ticket. And so it puts Governor Hochul in an interesting position of having what is broadly a running mate who obviously is no longer even in office. So it is definitely a challenge at this point.
And to add yet another wrinkle, according to reporting in the New York Daily News, the legislature is working with Governor Hochul on a controversial measure that would enable the removal of indicted former Lieutenant Governor Brian Benjamin from June's primary ballot. That's according to sources that spoke to the Daily News yesterday. The program bill from Hochul's office would allow someone who is indicted, charged, or arrested to remove their name from the ballot. It is expected to pass early next week. Sources familiar with the process said that, again, is according to reporting in the Daily News yesterday. So we'll wait and see how this all unfolds. Monday, it'll be something else. Before we go, Jay, I know that SUNY Sullivan has a health and sciences fair today. Can you tell us what's going on campus today?
Sure. So we do today, beginning at 12:30, anybody who's interested in a STEM field can come to campus, meet with some faculty and staff from those programs, understand what the pathway would look like moving forward, and apply for admission and be admitted on the spot and enroll for the fall. To that, I would add, we were recently, the county legislature approved a plan to provide free tuition for graduates of this year's high school class in all school districts within Sullivan County. So if you're a young person who is graduating from high school and are looking for the next step or looking after high school for the next step, please come to SUNY Sullivan. Your tuition and fees will be covered and you can start down the path to a new career or, whatever the rest of your life looks like. Maybe it's a transfer. Who knows? But we're open and we're ready.
And remind folks where it's being held and what the time is.
So it begins at 12:30. It is on our main campus at Loch Sheldrake, 112 College Road, Loch Sheldrake, New York, 12759. And, there will be adequate signage. It's the main admissions office is in the H building. But if you show up on campus, there will be people to assist you and point you in the right direction for the events of today.
Jay Quaintance, president of SUNY Sullivan. Hey, thanks for joining us this morning to try to sort out New York politics.
It's been a pleasure. I appreciate it. Thank you all, and have a great Saturday.
Thanks, Jay. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we're eating upstate at Brushland Eating House in Delaware County. This is Radio Chatskill.
Video of an officer holding his knee on a handcuffed man's head for 3 minutes. The sheriff accused of the cover-up threatens criminal charges against the reporter, uncovering the stranglehold on police accountability as George Floyd's on-camera murderer appeals his conviction. This week on the Janice Adams Show, the verdict. He's still in, but the jury is out. Does America have the courage to change? Saturday at noon.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, and this week, we are all about the deliciousness of real-life Japanese home cooking. Frozen noodles, microwaves, and everything. And we get the surprising histories of two of Japan's favorite comfort foods, curry and omelets. That's this week on The Splendid Table from APM.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Erin Shearer has the enviable task of eating upstate. It's her segment where she visits restaurants and food establishments in our region. Today, she's in Delaware County at the Brushland Eating House, run by husband and wife team Sohail and Sarah Zandi. They conceived of Brushland in 2014 with a, quote, serious hankering for hosting, a deep desire to feed our community, and a recipe for a mean schnitzel.
So I just like for like 2 minutes like to talk about like celebration and ceremony. It's like words that are sort of like thrown around and we take them for granted a little bit. Unfortunately, like we only really celebrate or have ceremonies when like really big things happen. Someone passes away and you think about all the great life they lived, or someone gives birth and you think that what is the start to a new life, but. Like tonight we have some birthdays here and we should celebrate those people. We have some anniversaries here, we should celebrate those people. We should celebrate that it's Saturday night and you're out to dinner in a room full of other people, right?
Yeah.
It's important. It's important. If you don't celebrate it, the ceremonious stuff becomes like mundane very, very quickly. So like, this is what this moment's for. Like, take it in, remember. Every day we show up here at work, we're celebrating. We're celebrating the fact that we get to be in a space and provide food for people that appreciate it and who are enthusiastic about it and who give it about it, it's an honor to do it. I don't have really better words than that, and so I appreciate you guys being here, and I just hope everyone has a good time. We just raise a glass to each other, to people celebrating something, to the room celebrating. So just knock glasses with whoever you want and have a good time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
See you guys.
What you just heard was Sohail Zandi toasting the crowd at Brushland Eating House on a balmy Saturday night last October. Brushland Eating House, located in Bovina Center in Delaware County, serves prefix meals with vegetables from their own garden, as well as ones provided by other local farmers. Like a lot of dining establishments, their operations were upended by COVID, but they used the opportunity to revamp their operations. They also own a couple of adjacent Airbnbs, and they're the subject of today's Eating Upstate. Sohail and Sarah Zandi, first met working at sister restaurants in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn in 2012. Shortly thereafter, Sohail relocated to Martha's Vineyard, where he worked on a cheese farm, and Sarah soon followed. Martha's Vineyard left them yearning for a slower pace of life, but they wanted to be closer to their family. Inspired by a couple of trips they had made early in their relationship, they decided to settle in the town of Bovina. In order to live in the Catskills full-time, however, they would need to find work. So they decided to open their own restaurant. Here's Sohail.
I never imagined we'd own a restaurant, but after living in Martha's Vineyard, we knew we wanted to move back to live in the Catskills for no real reasoning other than we'd been in there a couple of times and we're charmed by it, and it felt close enough to New York City, and it felt like it was accessible in terms of, you know, the pricing of buildings and just like general cost of living. So just tried to find a way to make that happen. How are we going to be able to live there? It was really the number one goal. I was working on a farm in Martha's Vineyard making cheese. And so that was kind of the mindset, was buy a piece of property and maybe have a small farm of some sort. And then I wisened up to the fact that that wasn't really a great way to make money. But eventually the idea was to have the farm, then maybe build a restaurant on the farm later on. So I searched long and hard for like a kind of like a farmhouse with some property. And we stumbled upon the restaurant building, and it sort of dawned on me that the best way to do it, to make it, to get to the ultimate goal of living in Bovina or the Catskills in general, was to buy the restaurant building, do the restaurant first, and then later on build out a garden or farm or whatever other things we were still interested in after that.
Brushland Eating House first opened in 2014. The following year, eater critic Robert Sietsema crowned Brushland Eating House, quote, the hickster restaurant of the year. And the year after that, Condé Nast Traveler named Brushland Eating House one of the 207 best restaurants in the world.
You know, it was just the affirmation, I think, that we were doing, like, because when we set out with, you know, starting a restaurant in a small town in upstate New York, I don't think there was like a lot of, you know, it seems like a very crazy idea. Even our, you know, closest friends, you know, there was a lot of skepticism, I would say, about coming, you know, not outwardly, but, you know, you can feel it from your loved ones and, you know, the people who are closest to you, you know, they'll smile and nod and say, that sounds like a great idea, but they sort of do it through, you know, they're gritting their teeth a little bit. So those things were just affirmation to us, and they were kind of just a little bit of wind in our sails to keep going.
Despite the acclaim, by 2020, they found themselves burning the candle at both ends. Then COVID shut everything down. For many restaurateurs, COVID found them in the pit of despair. But Sohail and Sarah found an opportunity to reinvent themselves. They had other factors to consider as well. That August, they welcomed their firstborn daughter. Throughout the pandemic, they offered barbecue on Thursday nights and something they called pod dining, private dining in a group setting.
I think they've been shifting so much in the last couple of years. So we always just try and stay flexible and offer kind of what makes sense for us. At that time, you know, people had spent that whole summer sort of doing to-go food and eating outside, and the weather changed. And we were at a point where I don't remember if there was, you know, government rules or if these are like just weight of the world rules, but we weren't ready to invite people back into the restaurant kind of as like a mixed group. So what we did was saying, basically you could privately rent the restaurant. It was a private rental of the restaurant space for the evening. And so it could be anywhere from two people to who would come and eat at the restaurant just by themselves, up to a party of 15 or 20 or whatever you were comfortable with. Usually it was smaller numbers because the people who were taking advantage of, you know, that experience were people that weren't comfortable eating with other people. And that's why they wanted to come, but they wanted to go out and eat. So it was pretty cool because we hosted a lot of people who would come in and say, this is my first time eating in a restaurant in X amount of time, like a year or over there. And so the majority of the pod dining was done. So the way it worked was that I could basically do it all by myself, is that I could cook the food and host the people. So we wouldn't have to expose, you know, the patrons to that many staff members. It was just literally me and them in a space. So it was a pretty intimate experience, and it was, I think, a lot of fun for a lot of people, and it kept me busy because it was a lot of work for one person, but
yeah, that's what we did until kind of maybe around this time last year.
In its early days, Brushland had been open 5 nights a week. Previous owners who had had restaurants in the area operated their restaurants as passion projects and at times would not open for the day simply because the owners didn't feel like showing up. So Hale and Sarah wanted to prove to the community that they were here to stay. And in order to do that, they kept it open 5 nights a week. When dining restrictions loosened up, they made the decision to cut down their operations from 5 nights a week to 2 and shifted from a walk-in restaurant with a regular menu to a reservation-only prefix operation. In June of 2021, they resumed regular operations.
Well, you know, after having some time off or, you know, away from regular restaurant service, I'd say that we kind of wanted to look at the landscape of what we were doing and sort of we wanted to focus on the things that we really enjoyed about what we were doing, about having a restaurant, about feeding people, hosting people. And we wanted to focus on those things and we wanted to sort of figure out a way to eliminate the things that we didn't like about having a restaurant, just the general stress of it and the push it to the limit kind of attitude that happens, you know, every day. And it seemed like a really obvious time to kind of shift. And I think the world was shifting. And I think that, you know, staffing is limited. And so everything kind of just lined up to the fact that, you know, we should sort of scale back and do something that's like more focused on the experience and not so much focused on trying to squeeze every dollar and cent out of the business. And I kind of use this analogy a lot. Like, I think when you start a business, I think that you count every penny. And I think that's what makes a great business, that people care about making money. I think if you don't care about like maximizing in the beginning, then it's just not going to be successful.
Each night opens with a free cocktail and a toast. Bovina is a dry community, meaning that it's illegal to buy or serve alcohol. But thanks to an abandoned hotel development in the 1990s, hotels and inns are permitted to serve alcohol. The Airbnbs they own qualify them as one such establishment.
Right out there, am I correct about that?
Yeah, exactly.
So do you like have a garden out there? Is that?
There's a garden, yeah, that I've had for the last like, you know, 5 years or so.
Okay.
So, yeah. And we get a lot of like herbs and stuff like that from that garden. Mostly herbs and smaller things. Then we get a lot of our like larger quantities of produce from local farms.
Brushland tries to rotate their meat sources. They get their beef from Bramley Mountain Farm, also in Bovina Center, as well as Fieldstone Farm in Richfield Springs near Cooperstown. Chicken comes from Grenon Farms in Merredale, as well as Black Willow Pond Farm in Cobleskill, where they also source their pork. Lamb comes from Evans and Evans Farms in nearby Andes. In addition to their own garden, they get their vegetables and other produce from Berry Brook Farm in Hamden, Rock Royal Farm in Walton, and Star Root Farm located in Charlottesville in Schoharie County.
The whole animals are kind of like a quarter cow or like a half a pig. And so we're really like dependent on slaughter schedules with those things. So we kind of it's kind of like maybe the most stressful thing about the job is like juggling where those proteins are coming from on a week-to-week basis. And then we're blessed to have a couple of really great vegetable farms in the area that are getting better every year. That's something that's there on the sort of the same timeline as the restaurant, where those things didn't exist 10 years ago, but they sort of have matured over the time, the last 10 years. And we have some really great local vegetable produce that comes to us from 3 or 4 really great farms. And there's mushroom people and there's, you know, we can't complain about produce anymore, except for in the winter when there is none.
They utilize the animal from nose to tail. And on the night that I visited, they were working their way through a pig.
Oh, nice.
It's a pig week, so we got a whole pig in on Wednesday. And we just sort of cook the pig for weeks.
So you got a pig in on Wednesday, and now you're in the process of making... there we go.
That's the shoulder.
Yeah, there we go.
Thank you. rest of it is sort of like preserved charcuterie or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's nice. It's been really good. Here is sort of getting into the, because not everyone eats pork and some people don't eat meat and so all that, so it's a lot of organizing, getting organized in our brains, sort of, right, figuring it out, where stuff, who's going to get what. That's the difficult part.
Sohail considers the transition to be a resounding success. All their old regular and semi-regular customers enjoy the new format, and he describes them as being over the moon. Here's Sohail himself with the final word.
You know, I think that we're just going to try and keep getting better at what we're doing and to just not be satisfied with the experience and keep thinking of ways to make it better. We don't think that far into the future. It's one of the things that I think is like important to us, is to be able to like look at what's directly in front of us and to be able to like adapt to it. So I think just our ultimate goal for this year is to keep doing what we're doing, you know, make ourselves available to experiences. I think that's something that kind of the new format does, is gives us a little bit of flexibility to do more things outside of the restaurant space. And then, yeah, I mean, just work on being better at all the small things.
Brushland Eating House is located at 1927 County Highway 6 in Bovina Center. I'm Erin Shear. Eating Upstate is a production of WJFF Radio Catskill.
And we'll take a short break, and when we come back, the connection between Radio City Rocket and the health and wellness industry. This is Radio Catskill.
Hi, Angela Page here from Folk Plus. What do all these artists have in common? Holly Neer, Peggy Seeger, Joan Baez, Judy Collins, Chris Smither, Eric Anderson, Buffy St. Marie. Well, if you're not sure, tune in Sunday at 4 and you'll find out.
On last week's Wait Wait, Ashley Ray wasn't worried about all the subscribers dropping Netflix.
I checked in with, you know, my ex-boyfriend's mom, sister's aunt, and her account that we all share is still working.
I'm Peter Sagal. You can just listen under your own profile as we come to you from in front of a live audience in Buffalo, New York. That's the News Quiz from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Amanda McCormick hails from a two-decade-long performance career, most notably performing as a Rockette at Radio City Music Hall in New York City for 9 years. She began expanding her interest into the health and wellness industry, first through personal training, then holistic health coaching, yoga, and meditation, what she calls a mind-body-soul puzzle. WJFF's Jesse Sposato spoke to McCormick about her journey into her own healing, love, acceptance, and growth.
I heard about you originally because you've been teaching creative dance and ballet classes for kids at the Chi Hive, which I totally want to talk about. But you were also a professional dancer for 20 years, including being a Rockette for 9, as I've read. yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about that experience, like being a Rockette and also just a dancer for so long?
Yeah. So I think being a dancer for me, I like danced out of the womb. I think I've always wanted to be a professional dancer. When I was 18 months old, my mom said I asked to be a ballerina for Halloween and was upset that there weren't ribbons on my shoes. So it's been like a lifelong thing for me, to be a dancer. My first season of the Rockettes was actually my senior year of college. I took fall semester off of my senior year of college to do my first season of the Rockettes. And and moved to New York City, which is a place I had wanted to live since I was 11. So it was like a big dream come true for me in many ways.
Where are you from originally, by the way?
I grew up in Virginia.
Nice. Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah. And I was going to school in Pittsburgh, in Pennsylvania, because I figured if I went to school in New York, I wouldn't have graduated college. So I tried to save myself. Yeah. So 9 years as a Rockette, it was really a great job and a great journey to go on. And I was kind of writing up some notes beforehand just to kind of think of answers to questions you might ask. Yeah. And a lot of what I've been working on in myself personally right now has been like healing my connection to the feminine. And I kind of realized that being a Rockette was almost my start to that when I was growing up. I ended up with a lot of friend groups, mostly because the girls never really liked me. I would people were mean to me. And I never understood.
They were jealous of like how amazing you were as a dancer and stuff.
I never understood why. And like when your mom tells you it's because people are jealous, you're like, you're my mom, you know. But so being a Rockette, I was literally in a group of 80 women. It was women that I was surrounded by. And so it was able to help me really heal a lot of pain that I had around being around other women. And it was able to show me that, you know, life isn't always the same as it is when you're a child, you know.
Oh my God. The It Gets Better project forever.
Yes, right. It gets better. But that we could be like these really beautiful goddesses, and we could be strong and powerful and incredible. And it kind of really showed me that how amazing being a woman actually is, and to be surrounded by so many different women doing the same thing, putting on this really spectacular show. It really kind of helped start that journey for me.
That's so cool. So that was like a foray into feminism that you never really had. And maybe you were always like longing, kind of, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think so. Longing for sure. I was longing for it.
So eventually you moved from dancing over to health and wellness, which I think is sort of the space you take up now. I was reading that you do some sound meditation work and intuitive empowerment coaching. Can you tell me a little bit about like what that all is and why you decided to make the switch?
Sure. So I realized that dance, I wouldn't be able to dance professionally forever. I had ended up sustaining a couple of injuries that opened my eyes to that, as an injury might. And so I first started exploring personal training because I cross training with personal training allowed me to do better in my dance performances. I was able to have more strength and stability and stamina. So I got into personal training, and in personal training, I felt like there was still something lacking, that it wasn't just like strength training or cardio that I was really interested in. Mm-hmm. So after that, I went through a health coaching program through the Institute of Integrative Nutrition. And that, while I appreciated the focus on biodiversity of humans and the fact that we're all different and that there's more than just food and exercise that go into our well-being. Yeah. It felt more food focused and like nutrition based. And again, that wasn't really what my passion was. I like went through a long period of time of like, nothing excites me the way that dance has excited me my entire life.
Yeah.
So I kept searching and I went through a yoga teacher training, which was really to like help me heal a broken heart. And I never intended to teach yoga in going through the training, but one of my teachers said, you are called to do this training for a reason, which means you're called to be a teacher. It might not be now, it might not be tomorrow, but the time will come.
Yeah.
And the time did come two and a half years later.
Nice.
So that kind of helped jumpstart the shift for me, the yoga teacher training, of realizing that my connection to myself and my wants and my needs and my spirituality and my connection to nature and my connection to what is divine for me, really helped create more balance and stability in my life. So that's what helped me start to transition out of performing full time and look more into the healing arts. And then I was attuned to Reiki. So I'm a Reiki practitioner as well. I got levels 1 and 2 attuned, and I'm currently in a shamanic Reiki master training program, actually with Angel Deer from the sanctuary. He's located in Calicoon here.
Oh, cool.
So I just kind of did a deep dive into all of this stuff. I ended up spending 3 months in India and Bali in early 2019. And after I got back from that trip was when I decided that I would really kind of full-fledged pivot into focusing on not so much performing professionally, even though I still did up until the pandemic started, but focusing on my role that I feel I have in this life as someone who is in service to others and helping others to heal and to be their best selves.
Okay, two things. One, I feel like specifically I'm curious about sound meditation work. Like, I don't really know that much about that, or I don't know if that's the thing you're focusing on right now, but that's something I was really intrigued by.
So with the sound meditation, I was kind of called to sound to explore it more deeply. When I was in Bali, I would walk past this little shop, this music shop every day, and I would go in. It was the size of a closet, like an actual closet. Mm-hmm. And, the man who owned it, his name was Adi. And I would go in and sit on the floor of the shop with him. And we would just reach up to the shelves and play all of the instruments. And I was specifically very drawn to this orange colored steel tongue drum that I ended up purchasing from him and just playing. And I had previously heard hand pans or hong drums, which I think a lot of people are more familiar with than a steel tongue drum. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, sisters or in the same family, essentially, at least sound wise. So I started playing that in Bali. And then I realized that I could, this would sound great with singing bowls. And I also had been going into a singing bowl shop, and mm-hmm. I would go in when my friend Made was working and ended up purchasing a singing bowl from him. And what I purchased there was an alloy Tibetan singing bowl. So one that was metal. Okay. And so I had these two instruments from my Bali trip. And during the pandemic, I was really called to play more because it made me happy.
Yeah.
The sound made me happy. The sound was really soothing. And a lot of people, when I would share playing, said that it was really calming and soothing for them as well, and that they would meditate to me playing. So that kind of started taking me down that path where I don't really have formal meditation training except for my own experience of meditating over the years. During the pandemic, I bought crystal singing bowls. And so I started my crystal singing bowl collection.
Nice.
And just started trying to play them while I played the drum. So I was doing like one with one hand, one with the other, just to get used to playing multiple things at the same time and see how that kind of intuitively flowed. And I initially would like write scripts for myself, and I would practice on Facebook Lives. I would do Mindful Mondays meditations. And so I would just practice that way, and I would write scripts and I would read them and I would play the instruments, and that just kind of felt like too much. So I started to just trust in my own inner wisdom. And so I would play and I would just kind of channel messages that would come through about whatever would come through. And then just kind of built from there. And it kind of seemed like I had a bit of a natural capability to it. And so I just kind of kept rolling with it. And it's something that I feel so expansive after doing. I can spend 30 minutes doing a sound meditation where I'm playing these instruments and I'm not exactly meditating in the way that, you know, comes to mind when you think of meditation, but right. in a way it is a meditation for me. And I'm, you know, channeling these messages of like love and peace and unity and trust and like really beautiful messages. And after I'm done, I just feel like the sun rays are coming out of me. It's just such a, it's such an expansive experience. So it is something that really speaks to my heart. Like I was saying before, I was having a hard time finding something that I was as passionate about as dance. Yeah. And leading sound meditations is definitely one of those things that makes me feel so good inside.
That's so awesome. Two thoughts. One, do you do it just for yourself, or do you like, you just said leading sound meditation. So do you do it like with other people, or like, could I come to a sound meditation session, or how does that work?
Yeah. So, sometimes I do it for myself, especially whenever I'm feeling, you know, flustered or sad, I'll sit down and I'll play, just to try to recenter myself, because I say that the vibrations that come from these instruments have a conversation with our subtle body, with the energetic body on a level deeper than we are consciously aware of. So yeah. sitting down and playing these instruments that are related to, you know, different energy centers in the body that are meant to kind of help remind your cells of their homeostatic, like vibrational state, you know, right. like this place of harmony, is really helpful whenever I personally am in a mood.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
Yeah. I have started to, do elongated shavasanas in my yoga classes so that rather than only getting a quick 2-minute shavasana, I try to give a 6 to 10 minute shavasana during which I'll play my instruments. And more recently, I started offering a sacred sound bath every first and third Sunday at the Chi Hive. Cool. Susan has been a really wonderful support in my success up here after my partner and I moved up here about a year ago. So awesome. So I do offer a sound bath every first and third Sunday there.
That's so cool. Well, what is like your favorite part about like creating in Sullivan County specifically?
I really appreciate that everyone that I speak to that lives here talks about how magical of a place this is, that there's just something unique and special about it, about Sullivan yeah. County, about the Delaware Valley, about being in this space. And people that grew up here moved away and moved back. There's just something that magnetizes people to this place. And that kind of helped me get over the fact that I never moved to Bali. Right. That I gave up like summer days 24/7 to half a year of winter, and like just wearing scarves and boots and hats all the time.
100%.
Knowing that so many people recognize the beauty and the specialness and the sacredness of this area. That and also hearing that Sullivan County rates amongst the lowest in the state for health. That was so shocking to me, but also made me feel like my services are needed here. You know, so many people are going to Bali or Thailand or Costa Rica or Ecuador to make wellness centers there because people want to get away there. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I've been to plenty of those. But I feel like I'm needed here. I feel like this area needs people that are able to help bridge the gap in wellness. And in what that looks like or what that can look like, and to make it more accessible, that it's not just, you know, for, I don't know, like hippie kids or millennials or, you know, rich people, like it's for everybody, and that there are different ways that you can go about healing and having a well-rounded, like holistically well-rounded life that you feel good about. You feel good about yourself. You feel good about your body. You're healthy. You're mentally healthy, you're emotionally healthy, you're physically healthy. And I know so many people now up here that I've spoken to that have this kind of same vision, that I feel like this Upper Delaware Valley will almost turn into like the Sedona of the Northeast.
Yeah, I hope so. That sounds great to me.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Thank you so much for chatting. This has been really great. I appreciate you sharing all of this information and, you know, about your experiences and stuff. And I definitely like to check out one of your sound meditation classes. So I'm going to be looking into that.
Yeah.
And yeah, is there anything else that you didn't like touch on that you wanted to add? I think we covered a lot, but
I think we covered a lot. My website is amandamccormick.love. If anybody wants to check that out. And I've recently started a local class schedule email list. So if anybody would like to join that, you can email me at amanda@amandamccormick.love.
Perfect. I love it. That's perfect. Thank you so much, Amanda.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Before we go, another healer, musician, and sound vibrationist, Mark Switko. He passed away recently, and tomorrow at 7 on Sunday Stage, WJFF's Kathy Geary hosts a tribute to Mark. She produced it along with his fellow friends and musicians. Mark was well known for exploring gong playing as a therapeutic, meditative, and performance modality for individuals and groups. Here he is explaining how he became attracted to gong playing in an interview from the WJFF archives. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
My first gong experience was Keith Moon. He had a gong and John Bonham had a gong, but they just hit it. Boosh. Yeah. They just hit it and bashed it. And then I started doing a lot of Kundalini yoga over in Hurleyville at Satnam Yoga. That's where I learned about it as a meditative instrument and a sound healing instrument. So from there, I just started studying it and took some courses with a guy named Don Conroe, who's a gong master. You can learn it in 5 minutes, but to master it, it does take a lifetime. So it's a super deep instrument. So that's where I kind of got into it and then started playing very regularly and built up meditation groups around Sullivan County, which is awesome. It's whether you play for a minute or 10 hours, there's something about it that just changes the listener. It's like hits you on a cellular level. So hopefully that'll come across on the radio. Whoever's listening should definitely pull over to the side of the road if they're driving, okay. Because we don't want a rash of gong car accidents. I fell asleep listening to JFF. No. And obviously the best way to describe it is to just play it. Thank you.
WJFF, Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Two Queens, offering coffee, tea, and bees. Located in Pete's Plaza, Narrowsburg, New York. TwoQueensCoffee.com. And from listeners like you.
Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health